All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox!
I have to possess this comic!
Baseball's the breakfast cereal!
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis?
Baseball's the coloring book!
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
Too long, why you gone? There ain't enough to keep me here too long. And not like the last time I stood in line, just enough to keep me boxing off the wall, yeah. The new day, the new trade that comes around, bills and all, enough to kill him while he sleeps. Is this the alley we drag him to? Just stop of Hollywood and Normandy.
Ooh, if it worked like she said it would, just like
in Hollywood,
just like a bad dream,
or so it seems,
just like,
oh, I'm back in the emergency.
Ooh, if it worked like she said it would,
just like
in Hollywood,
just like
a bad dream,
or so it seems,
just like,
oh, I'm back.
Kind of like, you know, like, even in the intro to this show.
Yeah, kind of.
It's right there.
It is.
Geek Stuff. This is Geek Stuff, episode 17, fucking Hollywood.
Fucking Hollywood.
We're going to take today, and we are going to bash Hollywood's cannibalization, their deconstruction, their dumbing down of the characters that we invested so much of our time reading and collecting and finding when we were kids, only to have it boiled down for this lazy generation.
Sure.
That's what they should be. They should be the lazy generation.
The Z generation.
I don't know, dude. Because it's not fair. How long did we spend... Let's just take you and I.
Uh-huh.
In the thousands of hours, how long did you and I spend learning about the X-Men and learning who they are and the relationships between the characters and going to cons and saying, hey, mister, I'd like X-Men 126 and I'll take it in very good condition if you have it, please, sir. And paying $10 for it or 11,
whatever it was.
Whatever it was, and getting it and trying to gap the two 125 and 127 together with,
sure,
126 and learning about these characters and growing with these characters, only to have filmmakers come along and go, hey, that's a good idea I can make a big summer blockbuster out of. Boil it down. No one's saying the movies are bad. What we're saying is Hollywood is really, really doing the characters a disservice.
Well, Hollywood has been bastardizing the written word for years. I mean, it's just now going towards comic books.
Right.
But for years, they've been taking these great masterpieces of literary art and turning them into films, and that, for the most part, are subpar compared to their original format. And it's the same thing with comic books. It's the same exact thing.
And we say fucking Hollywood, but we... In this room, the three of us will be the first to tell you that you can guarantee that we'll be the first online to see how Hollywood is deconstructing our characters.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's kind of like a love-hate relationship. While I hate how they do it, some of it is very nice, and I love some of it, and I love some of the treatment. So it's kind of like a give and take. The problem is that you really need to take both sources and appreciate them for what they are.
Right.
And too many people nowadays are only going towards the one source of what's on their television screen. they're not considering the original source.
Right. And the prevailing theory is that with comic book movies like Spider-Man and X-Men, that the kids will want to learn more about these characters, so they'll go seek out the comics.
Nah.
Except they're not going to find the characters on the screen in any comic book.
Right.
Because these are boiled down, pale versions of the characters that they will find in the comic. And for some of them, it will pique their interest. They'll say, well, wait a minute, this is not the Wolverine that I know.
Right.
This is not Hugh Jackman 6'2 and all big Wolverine. This is a squat little hairy guy. You know? Fundamentally different between the movie and the comic.
I agree.
And I think that these pale comparisons are, on the one hand, doing a disservice to the character, and on the other hand, have the potential to do a service to the comic industry. It is really a tightrope we're walking. And who, of course, is putting us on this tightrope?
Fucking Hollywood.
There you go. What's in the news?
Well, we're going to start off with James Cameron. Finally, it looks like he's getting off his big boat. And he's finally going back to some sort of sci-fi movie making that we've grown to love him for. He is currently working on two projects, one of which I believe is an original project titled Avatar, that I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know a whole lot about. I know that it's not based on the animated show or anything like that, as I've heard some people say or guess that's not it. So that one doesn't concern me so much. The one that does concern me, though, is Battle Angel. For those of you who don't know what Battle Angel is, Battle Angel originally was a Japanese comic book that was then turned into an anime and is now being converted into a film with James Cameron helming the project. Again, it's right in line with what we're talking about. They're taking this original source and they're going to be boiling it down and turning it into this film. Now, for this one, there's not a lot of information out there yet. It's kind of really the news is that Cameron has finally stopped doing Titanic and, you know, the secrets of Titanic and who gives a shit about Titanic movies and moving on to something new. So
good.
That's kind of nice. Getting past that, Michael Caine has come out and said that Joker definitely going to be in the second Batman film. Problem is, nobody knows who the hell the Joker's going to be yet.
Of course not.
So
that's arguably the most difficult casting choice that is going to be made in the next 5 years.
Yeah, that really is a hard role to fill.
And I can't even pick one.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I've had some ideas and I've heard some good ones and bad ones. And, you know, Robin Williams, bad one.
What, really?
Bad one.
Oh, God, no.
I've heard someone say Jason Lee.
That would be good.
I think that would be a good one. So we'll see. It's still kind of early. Michael Caine also referred to the movie as, we're going to begin filming The Joker next, you know, in the winter, I think he said, or something like that. So the speculation is that the title of the film might actually be Batman the Joker, which I think is great, but it's going to really depend on who they cast for that role.
And it's going to really cost me a lot of money in Joker memorabilia.
It sure is.
Damn it.
So, and something else moving along that's going to cost you a ton of money, being a Mike Mignola fan, in case you haven't heard about this.
Well, slow down.
He's doing a sci-fi animated series based on Amazing Screw-On Head.
Yeah.
Which I don't know anything about.
Yeah.
My focus with Mignola kind of began and stopped with Hellboy.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate Mike's art and I appreciate Mike's storytelling. I could never get into that one. And I'm actually kind of surprised that they're moving ahead. The real Mignola news, of course, is the fact that the Hellboy cartoon is going to be starting very soon. That, my friend.
Where is that going to air? Is that sci-fi or is that Cartoon Network?
I don't know that they've said.
Okay.
I do know at Comic-Con, which is, of course, this week.
Right.
They are going to be unveiling a lot more information and, I guess, character designs and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So maybe I'll have more to report on that next week or the week after.
Excellent. Well, I have one more bit of movie-related news. Again, based on a novel and a mythos that's already been around. This was actually brought to our attention by one of our fans. Our good friend Ken brought to our attention. They're making a Dragonlance movie.
Ugh.
You can go to dragonlance-movie.com. It's an animated movie, which I think might be the saving grace behind it. Because I think that if they tried to do live action, it would just stumble and fall.
Wasn't there a Wayans in that Dungeons & Dragons movie?
He was. He was in the Thieves Guild.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the only part of that movie, that original Dungeons & Dragons the only part of that Dungeons & Dragons movie that I really liked was the Thieves Guild. Was Richard O'Brien as the head of the Thieves Guild. And that little snippet that he had. The rest of the movie, really a bunch of shit. So, you can go to dragonlance-movie.com. The only name attached to it that I recognize is Lucy Lawless. As the, playing the voice of Gold Moon. Who I have no idea who that is.
That would probably be one of the lame characters that will inhabit this awful movie. Enough with the fucking D&D movies already.
The director is going to be Will Mugenow, whose credits include The X-Men and The Real Ghostbusters, the animated series. So...
Really?
Yeah, those were halfway
the
decent.
The Real
shows.
Ghostbusters?
Yeah. I like The Real Ghostbusters. You didn't like The Real Ghostbusters?
You remember the other Ghostbusters? The Filmation Ghostbusters?
Yeah, they were good.
Oh, man, that was awful.
That was entertaining.
Oh, my God. Were you like two then? You were entertained by bright lights and sound.
So
the hell are you making judgments for?
Well,
that's why Twilight Turtle is entertaining. No,
we'll see what comes from that.
You see how you're running over him?
Yeah, it's
he's
just
making a comment.
Nah, I don't care.
He's trying to bash me on Twilight Turtle. Now, I want you to be quiet. I want you to sit there and listen to Fantastic bust me about Twilight Turtle. Go ahead.
Ready? I already did.
No, everyone didn't hear it because Matt decided that he was just
the other guy.
Yeah. Matt decided he was just going to run over you. So, go ahead. Get your little insult out. Go on. Filmation Ghostbusters. You have anything? Let's not overkill on the movie stuff.
Well, I have actually. I have three bits of news that are all toy related.
All right.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. The first bit is the announcement of Wave 1 of what we are calling Indie Legends, but what is officially being called, I believe, Indie Spotlight by Shocker Toys.
Yeah.
There are four figures in this first line, and I think we would be remiss and not... at least saying what they are. It is Witchblade, Madman, Shadowhawk, and Judge Death. Judge Death from Judge Dredd.
Right.
Witchblade from Witchblade. Madman from Madman. And
all of Shadowhawk which, all of which, have had figures before. Isn't that interesting?
Well, hopefully though, these will bring a new. Bring something new to these figures, you know?
Well, yeah, sure.
I mean, as far as scale, articulation, and even sculpt goes,
right?
I'm hoping that what Shocker does is really is really amazing, and I hope that this first wave kind of sets the ground floor for what we can expect in the future waves.
I don't know. This sculpting of that Judge Dredd figure was,
Judge Death.
Death.
Right.
The sculpting of the Judge Death figure was really good.
It was, but I'd be interested to see what this new one looks like. Next, we actually got another email from one of our friends on MySpace, Starman, who sent me a message today letting me know that, and I know this, Target is re-releasing two Hasbro Star Wars Unleashed figures repackaged. Exclusive to Target.
Really?
Boba Fett and General Grievous. Now, the General Grievous figure, for the most part, I don't really care about. No offense to General Grievous or to Hasbro, but I don't know. It's General Grievous. I don't have much of a passion for him.
Yeah.
But the Boba Fett figure, I'm really excited about because I actually missed him the first time around.
Oh.
And it'll be great to finally have him in my collection.
Are they going to change him in any way?
I don't believe so. I believe that the sculpts are the same. The difference is the packaging. I think they're just re-releases.
It's a damn shame what they did to that line.
It is, but who knows? Maybe if they do well, maybe they'll re-release some of the other figures as well. I'll be able to get my hands on a Stormtrooper.
Yeah, right.
You never know. Wish. Maybe. Well, other than that, the last bit of news I'm just going to let you go with, because I know you've been dying to go with this.
Here we go. Hasbro has announced that they are continuing the Marvel Legends line.
We knew this.
Having thankfully taken it away from the awful Toy Biz company.
Right.
Their first Marvel Legends line, Hasbro's first Marvel Legends line, will appear in January of 2007.
Okay.
And it will contain the following characters.
Right.
Hercules, who is an Avenger long overdue for having an action figure.
Especially in a Legends line.
Right.
Hercules, thumbs up.
Right. Emma Frost.
Definitely worthy of a figure. Definitely qualifies for legend status, I would think, at this point.
It's skating.
But it is skating. I don't know.
Banshee.
Excellent choice. I agree with Banshee.
Definitely is a legend.
Definitely a legend. Definitely a dead character in the Marvel Universe. Definitely due for a good figure.
And we're all for making dead guys.
That's what I'm saying. So, two thumbs up for Banshee.
All right. But wait, there's more.
Oh, I know.
We've kind of gone through the good ones.
We certainly have.
Of course, they have to put a Hulk figure in.
Okay. Now, I'm not really overly familiar with this Hulk, but I've been told that this is a current or modern reincarnation of
Hulk.
Is that correct? This is, what is it, Battle Hulk?
Planet Hulk? Yeah.
Okay.
This is a current storyline where the Hulk is on some planet where he does battle.
So aside from the fact now that between the Hulk lines and between the Legends lines, we have more than enough Hulk figures, how does the modern incarnation of Hulk qualify as a Legends figure?
Well, the character is legendary, so they could say, well, this is a legendary character, and here's the kind of stuff he's going through today.
But the other incarnations of him in the lines have already been legendary. We don't need this one.
Mm.
There are so many other characters. Why another Hulk? That's my point.
There are so many other big-scale characters that they could have done, and I don't understand why they continually go to the Hulk. I just don't get it.
I don't know.
And speaking of characters they continually go to, that brings us to Iron Man.
Ooh, was this like the 10th Iron Man figure in a Legends line now?
It's got to be close. It's Ultimate Iron Man.
Now,
from the Ultimate Universe.
That's going to be hard, though, because that Diamond Select, or Marvel Select, sorry, the Marvel Select Ultimate Iron Man that came out was a really nice piece. And more appropriate for that line, I think, than this line.
And had very little articulation.
Yeah, well,
all those Marvel Select figures are nice.
They're statues.
They're nice, but they aren't very. Yeah, they are. They're more in the McFarlane vein of things where they're meant to be. They're meant to be set up the way that they can.
Right.
That they are pictured.
They're
set
just,
up.
They're,
and that's
they
it.
Come with a little display and diorama, and that's how they're meant to be displayed. But I think that Iron Man, that Ultimate Iron Man, was a really nice figure as compared to what I've seen here. But why don't you get that last one?
Yeah. Oh, it's not the last one.
Oh, is there two more? I thought there was
one
more.
No, my friend.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did forget one. Yes.
The next regular figure in the first Hasbro Marvel Legends wave would be the Kelsey Grammer Beast from the film X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
Okay. I am all for a Kelsey Grammer Beast figure. I am not for a Kelsey Grammer Beast figure to be in the Legends line. If they were going to do a Kelsey Grammer Beast figure, then they should have done an X3 movie line as opposed to that random X line that came out with the variant figure being Feline Beast.
Yeah, Catface Beast.
Well, yeah.
Call him by his proper name. Yeah,
sorry.
I am completely and utterly shocked that they've decided to do this.
Yeah.
But I am pleased in a way.
Okay.
And here's where I'm going with this. They bailed on an X3 line because the X2 line didn't sell. The X2 line didn't sell because they did Wolverine, Magneto, Cyclops. The figures that did sell were Nightcrawler and the extraordinarily hard-to-find Iceman.
Right.
They were the new characters. Those are the ones that sold. The rest of them were peg hangers.
Right, exactly.
And so from this, they draw the conclusion that, well, we shouldn't do X-Men movie figures anymore because they didn't sell. It's not they didn't sell. It's that their character selection, Toy Biz, 20th Century Fox, whoever is going to step up and take responsibility, well, we know it isn't going to be one of them. Actually, we know pretty sure it isn't going to be either one of them. But the point is that that's why it failed. It didn't fail because the figures were terrible. In fact, the figures were nice.
Yeah, they were all right.
They were better than the first movie figures, mm-hmm. by and large, I would say.
I agree.
So they failed because they did not offer enough new characters.
Right.
And now, rather than doing an X3 line, they are going to insert a Kelsey Grammer Beast figure into Marvel Legends line.
Okay. Now, if they continue to pepper these figures in there, then
that's
maybe
the good part.
Then maybe I'll be okay with it. Like, if maybe next one we get like a Kitty Pryde, and then we get a Colossus. And
okay, but I will offer you an
angel, perhaps.
I will offer you a counter. Okay. See, I see the road you're going down. Right, you're going down. Let's hope that they continue to do these X-Men
and
figures.
Pepper them in somewhere.
Pepper them in, right?
But
why X-Men? Because that's not what I want.
What do you want?
I want a Colin Farrell Bullseye action figure.
I wonder if there was a likeness rights problem there.
I want it now.
I think there might have been a likeness rights problem there.
I liked it enough to want a figure of it, and I never got one. What did I get?
Because the only really representation of that Bullseye figure that they ever did was that little midget, little wind-up walker thing.
Nah, he never came out.
Oh, he never made it out
either?
No. I bet it was a likeness thing.
Good. You know what? They should go back to him now and be like, look, you start in that piece of crap, Alexander. Just tell us we can make your damn figure.
Yeah, well.
Which, that was terrible. And you know what was even worse than that? What was even worse than that is the Daredevil they made was the third most inarticulate figure they've ever made.
Nice figure, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
it looked nice.
But he couldn't do nothing.
No.
Which, why? At that point, Marvel Legends was all about articulation.
You're
and
right.
With the exception of Toad and the Red Skull.
Well, but you know, if you remember too, he was the first time that they decided to pepper one of these characters into a Legends line. Because
right.
They followed shortly thereafter with a Thomas Jane Punisher in the Legends right. line.
And he was totally articulated.
Sure.
And a much better figure than Daredevil.
Sure. I don't know.
And then even Daredevil had a variant. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
Bearded, no beard?
Bearded, no beard, yeah.
Stupid fucking Toy Biz. Good, I'm glad they lost the license.
Well,
however, it would seem that they obviously must be doing some consulting because this is the same kind of nonsense that we've seen. Jennifer Garner, no Elektra action figure.
Right. Well, Michael Clark Duncan, no Kingpin figure.
Absolutely.
I would have taken one of those.
That Michael Clark Duncan over this Hulk.
Oh, sure.
In a half a heart second.
Sure.
I would have been like, bam, sold. And of course, the final figure.
Oh, that's right. I forgot the
Matthew,
final figure.
If you are lucky enough to find each one of these fine Marvel Legends figures, you'll be able to assemble Annihilus. Now, you know why they're doing this, right? There's a storyline right now
going on with Annihilus.
That has Annihilus going through
uh-huh.
it. So they're like, oh, let's get an Annihilus toy out there. And he's a Build-A-Figure. I guess he must be kind of big.
Now, that's going to be... This is the first Hasbro line, but there are, what, two more Toy Biz lines, is that correct, before we get to this line? Because isn't there a Build-A-Figure with...
MODOK.
With MODOK.
That's the last one.
Isn't there a Mojo one also?
Oh, yeah, Mojo. Mojo MODOK. That's
it. And that's it. And then Hasbro takes over.
But think about it, the timing is correct.
Sure.
Because it's... What month is this?
It's July now, so...
That's 7?
Yeah.
8, 9, 10... 10, 11, January.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense.
Right.
2007. Yeah.
So
perfect.
The timing is right, which means they've been working on these already. If you do want to see these pieces, you can pick up the current issue of Toy Fair.
Issue 109.
109. Yes. Very well said. And you can see the what they're saying are the prototype versions. Toy Biz, of course, is kind enough to call them a little rough, which is really sort of an embarrassment. Because these figures look like shit.
Well, now wait. I think that I think White Queen looks okay, and I actually think Banshee looks okay. Hulk looks like he hasn't been fully painted quite yet.
Yeah, I don't.
And Kelsey Grammer Beast looks like he went on a diet before they did the figure. So I don't know, but they are preliminary. So we'll have to see what the final product.
They're terrible. They're terrible. We've seen prototypes of Marvel Legends for years. They've never looked this bad.
I only want
We've
Banshee.
Seen prototypes. We saw prototypes at Toy Fair for the MODOK line, which is the last line. They look way better than this.
It's true. Well,
that's terrifying.
Well, but this was, I think, and I know that some of the people over at actionfigure.com will kind of disagree, because I was reading what they had to say about this. But I am terrified by that, because that's what I expected out of Hasbro.
That's the future.
And while I know some people are saying that they think that this is too early to make that kind of determination, that's my nightmare as far as this line is concerned, and as far as Hasbro is concerned with taking over this line. So we'll have to see where it goes. But I think that's it. I think that's all I have today.
Good.
Got anything else for us today?
No.
All right.
Let's get right into...
Well, why don't we take a little break?
All right, but I want to get into it.
And when we come back...
But I want to...
We will again attack that awful mockumentary that we've been attacking for the past couple weeks.
Oh, we're going to do that?
We are.
Good.
So as soon as we come back...
I hate that thing. Fucking Hollywood.
Mockumentary's out.
Fucking Hollywood.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Prepare yourselves. Prepare yourselves. For the cultural event... of 2006. As the relaunch of Big Kev's CriticalToys.com comes to you. July 21st, 2006.
Here we go.
You just love just tearing these guys apart.
You know,
rightfully so. Don't get me wrong.
And let's explain why. Because they are doing a disservice.
Right. Well, let's talk about what we're talking about first. You've been listening to the last couple episodes of Geek Stuff, I think we started back in episode 15. We've been picking apart this...
comic books on film.
Documentary.
Right. Made by... The Starz Channel and The Hollywood Reporter.
Correct.
And it is atrocious.
Right.
And it is largely a mountain of misinformation.
Correct.
About comic books and translating them to film. You know what? If it was just about translating these stories to film, you could play the whole, like, it's very objective or subjective.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, this is what this guy's opinion is about translating, so that's one thing. When they start stating facts
or what they're telling us are facts.
Yeah, about the comic industry, and they're wrong, they're doing a disservice to the industry.
Well, tonight's segment that we're going to tackle is about the X-Men films. I know in particular there's a lot in there about X3, obviously, because that's the most recent film.
Right. And I think this came out
recently.
Right around
the time that X3 was released. Right. So, or shortly thereafter.
All right, let's
get
see.
Into it.
I hope they start with a sexy shot of Femke Janssen.
So
you know, blowing that door off.
Over $120 million on its opening weekend, the X-Men comic book franchise is a Hollywood powerhouse. Audiences can't get enough of these uncanny mutants.
Well, that was great.
Sure.
What a fantastic introduction. Audiences can't get enough of these. Pause. Uncanny mutants, which is obviously a half-gay reference to the title of the X-Men comic book, because, well, the X-Men comic book, yeah, if this was 1981,
right. This
would be the X-Men comic. The title of the X-Men comic book, really the very large portion of it, because it was, you know, that only started at 94, I think.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. Is the Uncanny X-Men. And, of course, our friend the announcer has done his service to pander to the audience by, and the overemphasis, uncanny mutants.
As though he knows something.
Yeah.
Like a big, ooh.
And, you know, if he had followed it up with, actually, uncanny X-Men was the title of the majority of the book that became very popular.
That's too much fact for him. He can't handle all that.
Let's keep going.
Okay.
And if any mutants stand in our way, we will use this poison against them.
One of the things about the comic book itself, which I guess translated into the movie, is that there's like something for everyone. There's something about each of these characters that's sort of very real and very human, and like, yeah, they have superpowers, but they're all very flawed and very sort of very realistic in a lot of ways. The superpowers are just kind of like added extras. They're not kind of like, doesn't make them perfect, doesn't make their lives fantastic. And I think there's a little bit of, you know, that everyone can sort of relate to.
Shouldn't you be telling me to stay? To go upstairs and unpack?
I'm not your father. I'm your friend.
Like, she is so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, she couldn't be more obvious if she tried.
No.
These characters are flawed, and they have powers, and so that kind of makes them, like, outcasts, and they're, like, they're flawed, and they're real, and they're human because they're flawed, and their powers. And
way too deep.
She's a fucking idiot.
There's something there for everyone. What she said.
Yeah, there's something there for everyone. Is there?
Ugh.
I'm leaving that one in. Fuck it.
She's a boob.
That was completely... You know what she is? She's a giant Hot Pocket with no middle. She's just a Hot Pocket with no insides. Her head is a Hot Pocket, a beautiful, crispy Hot Pocket shell.
But the meatballs fell out somewhere along the way.
And when you do that tearing it in half like on the commercial, so you can see what the insides are, nothing inside. Just steam comes out.
It burns your mouth.
I'm not your father, I'm your friend.
This shit is hot.
X2.
What do you think? I'm working on that one.
Working on that one?
I'm not your father, I'm your friend.
Where was she in X3, too? You know, it was like, go on.
Because we had Kitty Pryde, so we didn't need so much Rogue.
Hate that.
Then they slice that in at the end. They slice in the one scene from X3 that was, you know, pointless about that had her in it, was that Wolverine's not her father. Thank you. Well, you know, because if I in any way were confused about their relationship, that cleared it up right there.
Well, they need to spell it out for the imbeciles.
I'm not your father, I'm your friend.
Why don't we see what happens next?
Why don't we see what happens next, Fantastic?
We all knew about the comics. We all did our research. And then we worked from the script and gave it our own spin, our own interpretation. And I think that's the only way you can really play it and hope that then it's going to appeal not just to the X-Men fans, but to a large audience.
Femke Janssen, hot.
Wait,
that part I like.
Isn't it Femke Janssen?
However you want to pronounce it.
Femke?
I'm not in. I don't care. She's hot. That's all I have to say about that.
You know what? She is hot. I think you and I are on the same page here. Fantastic? Femke Janssen?
This giant monitor's in my way, but I know she's hot.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. I think
something
you're
good has come from this documentary.
What, that she's hot?
Well, no,
listen
she
to what she's saying.
What? I like what she was saying.
We did our research.
Good.
We knew about the comics.
Good.
Well, that's good. That means she hasn't been, you know, like under a rock her
good.
Whole life.
Because wait, because I kind of previewed some of this a little bit earlier in anticipation of this tonight. Wait until what some of the other boobs have to say. She's there.
I know, but hold on. She read the comic, and then she put her spin on it so that it would appeal. Now, she didn't put her spin on it.
Well,
she put Bryan Singer's spin on it.
Sure.
That's the spin she put on it.
So you're saying it would have been better if that guy got up there?
No,
said,
no, I'm not. This is what I, if you let me finish, I'll tell you exactly what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, no, you forget you're getting away. You know, all right, she's hot. Fine. You're getting away from the why we're watching and talking about this. Again, it's Bryan Singer and in this case Femke Janssen and or both of them and the rest of them. They're reading the source material and they're saying, well, we're going to put our own spin on the character. And what? Forget the 30 odd years that the character already has in place or 40 years in the case of the X-Men?
Well, I think researching the character is healthy.
It's, oh, come on. It's not, is it researching the character or is it like, oh, that's what she looks like. Oh, there's an example of something that she does. Do you really think she read the Dark Phoenix saga?
No.
I mean, even if she did read the Dark Phoenix saga, do you really think, I mean, they didn't do the Dark Phoenix saga.
No, they didn't.
So where was the spin? The spin was the script.
Right.
That was the spin. The character was, there she is, she has red hair, she's kind of hot, I'm kind of hot, I have red hair for this movie. I mean, that's the spin. That's what bugs me about this.
I assure you that she is going to be the least of your problems in another, like, 30
right.
seconds.
Hold on tight, Big Kev, because right, it gets worse.
Can it?
It can.
For the actors, researching the roles was important for maintaining the fan appeal of the comic book.
Do I actually go outside in these things? What would you prefer? Yellow spandex?
So what they did was, our pal the narrator comes on and he says, researching the characters was important for...
blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And then they show the scene where researching the characters, where they're basically bashing researching the characters.
It was a funny little line, though.
It was a funny little line.
From the first X film.
It's the way that it's presented. Does nobody see this but me?
No, I see it.
Does it? They show the scene in X-Men X-Men, the first film.
Right.
Where Wolverine has just put on his... handy dandy X-Men leather padded right out of the set of Dune
outfit
suit, and I'm not one of the Fremen. I'm actually in an X-Men movie, and he's, you know, he's adjusting and see if he can fight in it, and then he gives a line, you guys go outside in these, and Cyclops responds with what would you prefer, yellow spandex? Which, of course, is a reference to the fact that Wolverine in the comic books wears yellow, presumably spandex of some sort of material. And he gives a little, you know, Hugh Jackman gives a little look like, You know, and it's one thing that you are updating the look of the characters for the film. That's one thing. But to... and I enjoyed it, too. I enjoyed the little joke, ha-ha. But I don't know. It never sat really right with me, and I think this is why. I think because, in a way, what it's doing is saying, you know what? That's silly. What you guys have been reading for 30, 40 years, that's silly. That's silly. No one would ever be running around in yellow spandex, yet I've been reading about a guy running about in yellow spandex for 30 years. Not quite 30 years,
right,
but long enough. So, all right, it's not visually appealing for film. That's fine, but do you have to kick it while it's down?
No.
And I mean, I'm on both sides of the fence on this. I can't even shit or get off the pot here. I'm sitting literally with the fence pole jammed up my ass because on the personal. One hand, I think it's a funny little joke and ha ha, and it's a little inside for geeks. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, hey, you know, I've been reading about that little yellow spandex punk for a long ass time.
It's Hollywood.
Even when he had orange and brown spandex.
It's Hollywood bastardizing the source material, which we've been talking about all episode.
And they always say how much they respect the source material. And
correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't this take on the outfits affect the later comic books that happened after the movies, like the Ultimate line, to the point where...
Actually, it wasn't even the Ultimate line. If you remember in the X-Men books, when Frank Quitely took over art on the book, they kind of had this yellow, this black leather.
Yeah.
Wolverine had the black leather jacket. Beast had a black leather jacket, although Beast hadn't been introduced in the films yet, but he had this new movie-style outfit on. Even they all did.
Yeah, they redesigned the character.
And this wasn't in the Ultimate Universe. That was in regular continuity.
Right. When Frank Quitely came out of the book, they redesigned the characters to be more fitting of the movie characters. And again, that was kind of that whole, we want to transition the kids into reading the book.
Right.
So we need to do that. Was that the
best?
We
need to update the look.
Yeah. Well, do we?
I think it's
been
made
the look
it more,
for 30 years.
I think it's made it more accessible.
Undoubtedly, it's made it more accessible.
And what's wrong with that?
They changed it back.
Well, that's the problem. The problem isn't that they changed it, because I actually kind of like the new character designs. The problem is that they were uncommitted to it. Like everything else that they do,
he's
uncommitted.
Yeah, but in Marvel,
just go with it.
This is typical of Marvel Comics. Do you know he's in two different books right now wearing two different costumes?
Well, yeah.
He's in Astonishing X-Men wearing one costume,
and he's in
New Avengers, which he is one of,
right?
All at the same time, wearing, I'm pretty sure, a different costume.
So he's got two jobs?
Well, Wolverine's always been a multitasker.
Or it's two different universes. It's definitely two different universes. There's no fucking way they're the same character.
Wolverine's a multitasker.
Wolverine is everywhere. You know, according to my calculations, there has to be 63 Wolverines running around the Marvel Universe in order for him to appear everywhere that he appears in all these different appearances in books.
That'd be interesting.
60 fucking three.
Well,
a month.
Why don't we get on? Because there's still some more good stuff coming here.
Right. Bad stuff.
You know, I know how diehard these fans are, and my number one priority was to get the character right, and you know, you don't want to do something completely different. So I went to a couple of comic stores and asked for guidance from some of the guys there and certain issues that I would research. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, a script was written, and that's your guidance. You know, that's your sort of manuscript.
And James Marsden is exactly correct. Like everything about James Marsden associated with the X-Men, he's perfect.
He was. He really was the closest realization of the comic book character
in every way.
Film out of everybody.
In every way. Uh-huh. In look, in attitude, in his relationship to other characters. He was perfect.
I agree.
Perfect. And what he is saying now is the same thing. Perfect. It's exactly how he should have handled it. It's exactly how they all should have handled it.
Right.
They should have went to a comic book store. They should have asked the fans about the character.
Right.
Don't try to pick up 30 years worth of books and read them to discover where this character has come from. Go to somebody who's read it for 30 years and say, tell me about the character. And then I can not bother telling you that Master Mold occasionally pops up out of nowhere into his life. And I don't have to give you a detailed history of the character. But me as a fan of that character for 30 years, I can boil it down for you enough so that you can take my boilings and then bring it to your, again, James Marsden makes a good point, script. That's the script we were given. I'm an actor. I'm performing this character.
Right. I wanted to say that.
And I agree with that.
I wanted to say that that was really probably the most important thing he said there. The fact that he drew the correlation between his research and the fact that he did have a script that may have deviated from his research was important. The fact that he was able to pick the two differences out but yet make it work is important. And that's why he was the best one in all three films.
Absolutely the best one. I don't care what anybody says. He was the best.
Mm-hmm.
The best.
Who's next?
Logan, I'd like you to meet Aurora Monroe.
You know, I remember with the first X-Men, Bryan Singer encouraged me, and I think all of us, not to really read the comic books too much because there's so many different, you know, incarnations of each of the characters that it could become really confusing.
Did she just...
I wish ill will upon her.
Did she just say that he encouraged them not to read the book?
She is completely contradictory to everybody else so far.
Everybody has so far has said... Femke Jensen,
and it explains
James
so
Marston,
much, really.
It does.
Said that they that we were aware of the comics and that we went and then... And James Marsden did his little research and stuff. And she apparently was the only one who was told by Bryan Singer, look, don't read the comics because that's not what we're going for here.
God, I hate her.
If you've never seen a Halle Berry movie in the past, that one thing that she says right there, if you like movies, that would make me want to kill her.
I do.
I hate her.
I do. I don't normally wish ill upon people, but I do, I want to see her get hurt. That's the feeling that I have. It's just
you
bad things.
You under-talented bitch.
Really?
Oh,
thank you. Thank you.
Let's get through this. Let's see what else Academy Award winner Halle Berry has to say.
She's an ass.
So at least I read it loosely to get a vibe of what the comic book was all about, what the message was, and I studied all the characters, you know, just to figure out what this universe was all about.
Right. So she was discouraged from reading the books, but she did research the character. Well, how'd she do that?
Well, not only did she research her character, but she studied all the characters.
She right, read an encyclopedia.
Yeah, exactly. Is that what she did? Because, I mean, her textbook approach to the character of Storm in all of these movies, I mean, is derivative of something that you would get out of an encyclopedia. What, she go to Wikipedia and look up? Probably, there wasn't even Wikipedia for her to even look up Storm. Well, he really discouraged us from reading the comics because there's so many incarnations and it can get so confusing. So I went out and did my research. What? In the streets?
Is she,
like, did you, what? Well, where did she go? What did she do?
It's obvious. She went to interview real life mutants.
Yeah.
Found them.
That's it.
And then asked them how things are going.
Fantastic. You hit the nail on the head.
That's it.
Perhaps the easiest research I've ever done was for X-Men, because the studio just sent over piles and piles of comic books. That's no real hardship, as far as research is concerned.
Okay, so the studio actually sent over piles and piles of comic books for Patrick Stewart, who, according to Halle Berry, was discouraged from reading the comic books like everyone else was.
I think
yet the studio, apparently working against Bryan Singer, sent him shitloads of books anyway.
I think Halle Berry is going to claim that her performance was sabotaged by the studio, and that's the excuse.
Her performance was sabotaged by a lack of talent.
But they didn't send her any comic books to read.
That's right. She had to go out in the streets.
I think she's selling Bryan Singer down the river.
I think she's making herself look like an ass.
Well,
but
yeah.
Let's stay focused on Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
Patrick Stewart, I would say a very close number two to Cyclops as being the greatest transition character from the pages of the book to the screen.
Definitely the actor of choice, right?
Oh,
definitely.
By far. Absolutely. Can you even imagine anyone else playing this part? You know, that was like, wasn't that the first thing we said when we were like, they're making an X-Men movie? Patrick Stewart is Professor X! Every geek in the world, like you could, it's still hanging over Iowa somewhere or something where everybody actually screamed that out. Because, I mean, there wasn't a better, and you know what? It was part of the fact that you wanted this movie to be cast perfect. And the other part of it was the fact that he got totally dicked over for Batman and Robin, which, as it turned out, was a bright move
right
for him and a shitty move. Not that it would have helped that movie at all.
No.
But just a little quick background on that.
Who was he going to be in that?
He was going to be Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. Oh,
it was down to him and Schwarzenegger for Mr. Freeze. They went with Schwarzenegger because he had a bigger name.
Well, he's got the acting chops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Schwarzenegger. He's quite the actor.
But Patrick Stewart in look and feel would have been a better Freeze.
Absolutely. And not only that, they would have gone with, I mean, you'll never find these nowadays, but there were mock-ups.
Yeah.
Of what the character would look like had they cast Patrick Stewart, it would have looked like the animated series.
It would have been great.
Which was a simple Freeze. And as it turned out, it's probable. It is. It's not even probable. It is great that he didn't get the role.
Uh-huh.
Because if they had done what they did to Schwarzenegger for Patrick Stewart, I mean, I think it would have been even worse.
Would a Patrick Stewart Freeze use the skating minions on ice as his like cannon fodder to throw as Batman around?
You mean
Batman
the ones that are the ones that are constantly surrounded by blue and pink neon?
And they got hockey sticks as
those
weapons?
Ones. He should be fucking killed.
Well, yeah, but he's not in this documentary, so
let's see what else old Pat has to say.
Because I was a beginner, I knew nothing about the whole lore of X-Men. And in fact, even still today, I'm learning from fans details about relationships and so forth that emerged during the years of the comic book that I have not been aware of.
And again, why do fans think that his portrayal of the character is really one of the best, including this fan and mm-hmm. you and
sure.
Fantastic over there?
Right.
Why do we think that his character was great? Because he and his characterization, his translation of the mm-hmm. character is great because he went to the fans.
Sure.
He's learning from the fans. Fans were discussing character relations, like the relationship between him and Scott, for example, which
right.
is obviously a lesson. Obviously, a fan taught James Marsden that lesson because there's no way he'd have pulled off that scene with Xavier unconscious without somebody saying to him, you know, this is this situation and
right.
this is what would have happened. Or they pointed to the issue back in the day where Professor X did die.
Yep.
But it wasn't him. It was
right, yeah. Right,
Changeling right. or whoever the hell it was. And Patrick Stewart backs that up by saying, I'm learning even today from the fans about the relationships between these characters and so on and so forth. Yet, Halle Berry has nothing.
Well, Halle Berry, arguably the worst person in all three films. James Marsden and Patrick Stewart, arguably the best two people in all three films.
Well, they're certainly up there.
X-Men The Last Stand may be the final chapter to the X-Men story, but in the world of comic books, there never really is an end.
Right, there's never really an end in comic book stories. He's actually right about that.
He's very right about that.
There's no character that dies and never
permanently
comes back. There's 10 of them running around right now.
Sure.
Isn't Bucky is running around again.
It's the Chris Claremont school of thinking.
As the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Which is apparently Bucky was Captain America's sidekick, was killed in World War II, and apparently wasn't killed and became a super soldier for Russia or something. It's actually, as bad as I'm making it sound, it's not a bad storyline. And you have Jason Todd, who's the second Robin after the original Dick Grayson decides to go off on his own and become Nightwing.
Right.
You get hothead Jason Todd, right. who gets bludgeoned to death by the Joker with a crowbar in the storyline. Do you remember the name of it, Matt?
Death in the Family.
Death in the Family. Very good. Very good. And then exploded, and you have that great scene of Batman carrying Robin out, and he looks like a pizza.
Yeah.
Oh. One of my favorite panels ever. And he's bouncing around like he's alive again.
Sure.
So as far as we're to understand, he is alive again. I mean, you know, nobody does stay dead in comics. However, that ain't true in film.
No.
And there's no way after the numbers that this movie put up, is this going to be the end of this franchise?
No, they'll find a way to frame.
The studio are adamant that we are pulling down the curtain on the X-Men franchise. And yet, you look at the film carefully, and it seems as though there are doors that have been left ajar just A little bit. Avenues that might be followed.
A little bit?
A jar.
A jar?
What?
You could run a fucking bus through that door. It's so wide open.
We did see Cyclops glasses.
We also did see Magneto move the piece.
Look, exactly.
And
it's
we saw
everything
Professor
we talked
X
about.
Alive. Well, yeah. Practically alive.
In the new body.
Yeah.
We didn't see Cyclops die. We know the cure doesn't work because Magneto, with the little twiddly thing of his finger and the little character moved, the little metal chest piece moved. I mean, obvious at this point.
A jar.
Yeah, a jar.
A really big jar.
Like Costco size.
It's the fact that I and my company are developing with Fox a movie about Wolverine. I want to make a movie that fully explains his character, so you know exactly who he is, everything. I think he's been central, in a way, to the stories, but I still feel there's more to explore. Let's go.
So what does he want to do? Make Origin into a comic?
I think it's not going to be Origin. I think it's going to be Weapon X.
You think so?
Yeah. They already laid some stuff down with Stryker.
Yeah. Well, I think I've actually read rumors about it being a Weapon X related movie.
Well,
I don't think they're going to go. They might dabble in
little
Origin,
flashbacks.
But I think its primary focus is going to be Weapon X.
Makes sense.
And that would explain why they're going to use Tyler Mayne again as Sabretooth if it's going to be a Weapon X story.
If it happens. Well, they've given no evidence that Sabretooth was part of any of the Weapon X stuff. Only in the movies, so far, only in the movies, they've indicated that Wolverine and Lady Deathstrike were part of...
No, there was that kind of that little bit of sequence in the first movie where Sabretooth gets the dog collar, chains, whatever the fuck they're called, from Wolverine. And he holds on to him and he kind of wears them. And Wolverine's like, I think you've got something of mine. Later on in the film, they kind of teased a relationship. But then obviously they got rid of Sabretooth at the end of the first film and he hasn't appeared in two films. So
right. There's
something there.
And that's how they close out their segment on the X-Men.
That's it.
So we can't, we're again left in a lurch about... the information that this is giving.
Right.
I mean, because it appears that some of them in some way did some research that had something to do with the books and with the fans.
And it's obvious the ones that did.
Right. And Halle Berry did research, even though she was told not to do research, but she didn't read the books, but she did research.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical for this piece. You know, they don't really give you anything profound. They really kind of try to wrap it up matter of fact, and nothing in there is fact. So,
right.
So it's really kind of useless. I think we're probably going to leave this documentary alone now for this week. There's more, so we'll hit it again next week.
Oh, heck yeah.
But we're going to take a little break right now.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark.
No, stop it. Do it right.
This is Mr. Fantastic.
There you go.
Producer of Geek Stuff. Check out the home site at www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com where you can download each episode, check out image galleries, and drop us your comments each and every week. That's bigkevsgeekstuff.com. I fucking hate you guys.
And we're back.
We're
talking about Sideshow Collectibles.
We are very excited about this piece.
This is a Geek Stuff favorite company.
It sure is.
And we're talking about Order of the Jedi, which is Sideshow's 12-inch Star Wars line.
Right. Now, this is the second piece in the line.
This will be the second piece, Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
12-inch. Fully articulated, of course.
Hold on. Getting ahead of yourself.
Am I?
Let's not forget the ultra cool magnetic packaging.
Yes, the packaging has a flap with seemingly invisible connections that keep it shut, and actually they are, in fact, little tiny magnets.
If you remember, we talked about that in length the last time we talked about the Order of the Jedi.
We did, which is why I didn't want to spend so much time on
this. I know, I just wanted to bring it up.
It is great. Like all sideshow products, you need to consider, like all products, really, you need to consider the packaging as part of the product.
Sure.
And this packaging, sideshow packaging in general, is exceptional. This packaging is even more so.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've gone above and beyond with the packaging on this line.
I agree.
And you're right. You know, we would be remiss to not mention it. Again, you have the figure, incredible likeness, incredible posability. You have the cloth costume, sort of Jedi utility belt.
Well, this is Revenge of the Sith, Anakin Skywalker.
Correct. This is the
episode
Anakin,
3.
Correct. That will episode. Turn at the end of this film and become Darth Vader.
Correct.
And actually, and I may be mistaken about this, and I guess we'll find out.
I'm sure.
That Sideshow's San Diego Comic-Con exclusive is kind of an evil version of this. Kind of maybe the hair's a little bit messy and the eyes are that kind of
got like the bag
red.
Under his eyes.
Kind of evil. And I think it's called Darth Vader. I think they're calling that piece
really?
Darth Vader.
Wow.
I think. I may be wrong about that.
Is that crispy headed Anakin?
No. But you can make one.
I'm sure.
Very easily I would expect. But why would you want to?
No, sure.
You won't want to ruin such a beautiful piece as this. So the figure is contained in one portion of the packaging, and of course we have the two flaps on the inside here give us a bounty of information about the character. Yes, the flavor text, well said. And then of course there's the other windowed section, which comes with a just kind of a pull-out tray where you can retrieve other accessories like some a communication device, looks like the Jedi breathing apparatus.
Right. It's a holo projector, I think, in there. And
yeah, I think that's what the other piece is, a holo projector. And there's an unlit lightsaber handle.
Right.
And then there is a lit lightsaber handle.
Right.
And so that's very interesting.
There's also...
there is a regular hand. Which is the left hand, which you can either get. This is actually the regular. He's not gripping anything, so it's kind of a regular hand.
Right.
And you also have the right arm, but you have the exposed,
the robotic,
mechanical arm that Anakin has at this point in the Star Wars story.
Correct.
It's kind of, it's kind of that bronzy, metal-y looking mechanical arm, which is kind of great because the other one, the one that's on the figure, comes with the figure, is the black-gloved version.
Glove.
And that's great also. But this is kind of just that arm, particularly the robot mechanical arm, is actually really great, is a really great addition to this figure.
Sure.
And of course, it comes with the collectible stand as well. The stand, so you can stand the figure. Not a lot of people using the stand with the sideshow pieces.
Well, you know what? I don't know about these particular pieces because I haven't actually opened the one that I have yet.
Right.
But I have all of the Buffy 12-inch pieces, and I do use the stand.
Oh, you do?
I do because I find that depending on the pose that you want to put the piece in, and there is articulation within them, they don't they don't stand well necessarily without the stand. When you shift the arms, depending on the accessories in the arms, it throws the balance off and they tend to tip forward a little bit, and the stand kind of holds them in place. The good thing though about the stand is that the stands are never just plain and generic. There's something about them, right? They at least say Star Wars on them, or the Buffy ones at least say Buffy on them, so that there's some sort of flavor to them. And also, because the 12-inch pieces have the real clothing on them, the real fabric clothing, you can hide the brace of the stand underneath the clothing. So you don't actually really see it. It's not obtrusive, and it doesn't detract from the figure, which is great.
No, you're right about what you're saying about the stands. Obviously, you know, there's going to be some eccentric posing that right. you're going to be able to do with an articulated figure like this. And you want to, you know, sometimes you are just attached to a pose. You got to have the piece in that pose. And I understand that. And so in that case, it may be wise, or it may be necessary to use the stand to assist that. For me personally, and this again is a personal choice, for me personally, I'm going to find a pose or a positioning or a look that I enjoy that does not use the stand, because to me it just seems distracting.
Well, it's personal preference. I mean, the good thing about the piece is that they do stand without the, you can pose, position, stand, place them without use of the stand, unlike some other companies that use stands. You know, it's not necessary, but it's there if you need it.
Do you notice also that that he has the Vader hilt?
I did.
Is that right?
Well, the saber that comes with it, much like the saber in the film, it's kind of like that progression to the to the Vader saber. It's
so got this the isn't the Vader?
It's not the Vader. Exact Vader. It's got that bottom portion of the saber
right.
that's very much like the Vader saber.
Right.
But the top portion of it, the design is a little different. Oh, the coloring is different.
Yeah, it's all silver.
It's all silver as opposed to it's got that silver and then the black with the swoopy part that kind of
I missed that.
Cups the blade.
I missed that entirely.
Yeah. Huh. No, so it's correct.
Well, of course it's correct.
Right.
Because it's coming from Sideshow. And they would not screw up such a detail, I would say. We should also take a moment away from the 12-inch Anakin to look at the other piece that's current Star Wars from Sideshow, and that's the General Grievous premium format figure.
Yes.
There he is, standing in the studio.
Gorgeous.
Humongous.
He is. The size is really astounding on that
piece. And it really is one of their finer pieces, I have to say.
It is.
I mean, initially, and maybe still a little bit, I wonder if that was the right character to go with. And I have to say, I'm sure the reason that they went with Grievous here is because the expectations for the character in the last film were so high that you almost had to be like, oh, we got to go with this guy.
But here's the thing. While the expectations in the film may have fallen a little bit short of probably what they were hoping, the expectations for the character in the animated series
were fantastic. Right.
So it's still a representation of
that character.
So right. It's still a quality, amazing representation of an amazing character.
Right. That's true. That's very true. We're looking forward to more Sideshow pieces. Obviously, the 12-inch ones are coming at us fast and
furious. I am looking forward to the inclusive edition of the Darth Maul figure that is the first in their Sith line that they had a limited order window open that will be shipping, I think, fourth quarter of this year. But we'll get to that another day.
Okay. Still to come in this line is Kit Fisto.
Shirtless Kit Fisto.
Well, he will be when I get him. Again, I think that's an interesting choice.
You know what? Again, I think the character Kit Fisto in the movies kind of died a little bit, but I think the character Kit Fisto in the animated series really picked off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I think, I think he's good.
I think he just looked a little silly in the film.
Well.
He's a big rubber-headed mask-looking dude, and in the cartoon, he was fantastic.
He was. Ripped.
That would be the Clone Wars cartoon that we keep.
Yes. Yes.
And also coming is Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Which Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Seems appropriate. It is episode 3.
Okay, so it's not classic Kenobi.
No, it would be episode 3 Kenobi, and by all reckoning, had to be done if they're going to do this Anakin. Because these are two you're going to want to pose together.
It sure is.
I think. I think they'll look fantastic. Do you remember the just to bounce this off you? The
I know where you're going with this. The Unleashed,
absolutely.
The two Unleashed figures, the two Anakin Unleashed figures, and Obi-Wan little display base
that you can join together.
Wow!
And I'm saying you could get that kind of display quality from these pieces as well.
Sure.
So once again, it's the Sideshow Order of the Jedi Anakin Skywalker 12-inch figure. It is the Sideshow Premium Format General Grievous Quarter Scale display, or rather museum quality piece. And look, if you're not, we say it 1,000 times and hope to goodness that everybody is listening and passing it along. If you are not looking and buying Sideshow, you are making a mistake. You are not doing yourself justice as a collector if they are producing anything that is something that you're interested in. It is the top quality.
Correct.
SideshowCollectibles.com. Correct? Sideshow Toy. Sideshow Toy. I think it's both, actually. Sideshow Collectibles and Sideshow Toy. Fantastic is now scrambling to the keyboard to see if I am an ass or if I am actually correct for once on the stupid website names. Notice I did not say
www. Very proud of
you. See, I'm getting over that. It is SideshowCollectibles.com.
That is valid.
Yes.
But it's SideshowToy.com.
So you can go to either one. If you're a typing type of person, you like to type, you go for collectibles.
I personally like...
Lazy guy, you go for toy.
I kind of like Sideshow Toy over the controversy of the correct spelling of collectible. I've been through that once in my life. I don't need to go through that again.
This is true. Again, Sideshow Collectibles, Sideshow Toy, Sideshow Toy.
Hey, Kev, when we're not here doing geek stuff, I'm busy writing for my website, collectiblebitsbox.com, where you can find all sorts of news and reviews on all your favorite toys and
Matt.
What?
Oh, come on, man. I know that you want to promote your site, collectiblebitsbox.com, with its in-depth reviews and articles and fun facts, but this is the
podcast. We also have a MySpace page.
Stop with the fucking self-promotion!
I'm sorry. Collectiblebitsbox.com.
Shut up!
Well, this could be cool, 'cause we can be together. Nothing lasts forever. Me, I'll be your fool. Pick you up when you fall down and move across the dance floor and let me buy you a drink or two.
That is, without question, one of the most exciting episodes I think that we've ever put to the tape.
Well, you know, any episode that's called F Hollywood,
it's not really.
It's got to be a good episode.
Not really tape, though, is it?
I don't know, kind of recorded tape.
He's being nostalgic, retro. Mm. That's it. Yeah,
exactly. Well, what did we talk about tonight?
Well, we started out with the news.
We did. We talked about James Cameron finally getting off the Titanic and getting back into film, and one of his first films being Battle Angel, which was a manga that was made into an anime that's now being made into a film.
With big breasts.
Draw that line somehow. We talked about Michael Caine saying that the second Batman film tentatively is going to be Batman the Joker. Solidifying the fact that the Joker definitely in the film, but no Joker yet. And that's going to really make or break the film. We talked about the Dragonlance film animated film being made, which we will have some more information on as it becomes available.
Ugh.
I don't know. I think that might be okay.
No way.
I'm excited.
D&D I think it might movies, be okay. Bad. Animating them doesn't make them any better.
Meh. Well, speaking of animated, we talked about Mike Mignola's cartoon coming out, Amazing Screw-On Head, for the Sci-Fi Channel.
And that's really not the news there. The news is that the Hellboy cartoon is finally coming. And just to harken back to that D&D thing for 1 second,
mm-hmm.
I draw your attention, my friend, to the D&D cartoon.
I love the D&D cartoon. I know you love it. I watched it yesterday, a copy that I got from you.
Nice!
I watched one episode.
I love that old cartoon, man.
It's horrendous.
Oh. It was terrible, man.
Oh, I don't care.
You know what, though, Fantastic? There is one good episode. It's when they all decide they've had enough and they want to kill Venger. And they trap him on Tiamat's plane. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
That's like the only decent hardcore. They all work together and they bring him down. And he's on his knees and he's beaten. And Dungeon Master walks over and goes, "Rise, my son." And everybody that I knew freaked the hell out.
Everybody you knew
was
watching it.
What the fuck does that mean? What the fuck? That Dungeon Master's his father? What the fuck?
I don't care what either of you say. I like that cartoon. But moving along, we talked about the first indie spotlight line that's coming out, Witchblade, Shadowhawk, Madman, and Judge Death.
Right. And I said to that, you know, it's, again, they're starting the line by doing all characters that have already been made before. So on the one hand, you could say they're doing this because they want to show that even though these characters have been done, that Shocker is going to do them the right way.
Right. And I think that's the point that they're trying to make.
Or the other point is that they just didn't do enough research.
Right.
And of course, one of our favorite lines to talk about.
Ooh.
Marvel Legends being taken over by Hasbro. And of course, as we predicted, it's a nightmare. Mm. It's a nightmare of epic proportions as we look at the first wave coming from Hasbro in January 2007. Seven characters who we couldn't be less excited about.
Well, one or two of them I'm pretty excited about. Three of them maybe.
You know.
Banshee.
Look, just
Banshee.
Look at them. Come on.
Look at Herc's teeth.
Look at them.
Look at his grin.
Look how awful they are.
I know, but I want a Banshee figure.
Yeah, you and everybody else. I got a Banshee for you.
Ew.
Well, anyway, the
you know
lineup,
what that means?
The lineup in there is Banshee, White Queen, Hercules, Ultimate Iron Man, Movie Beast, Kelsey Grammer Beast, what is it, Planet Hulk?
Yeah.
And the Build-A-Figure is Annihilus. So that's the lineup. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Toy Fair 109 is the issue if you want to see the images. They claim that they're rough and preliminary. We'll have to see what happens.
We claim that they are
stinky.
Shitty.
Right.
What, stinky?
Well,
they
whatever.
Suck.
From there, we moved right into our favorite documentary.
Oh, Comic Books on Film. As seen on the Starz channel.
And put together by the Hollywood Reporter.
Yes.
And tonight's piece focused on the X-Men and the X-Men film franchise. And really, it's more of the same misinformation. It's really more of what we were talking about tonight with Hollywood kind of dumbing down these movies a bit. For a new audience.
Right.
And it's really more proof that Halle Berry is just a moron.
Yep, it's true.
Can you picture her leaping through the comic books looking for the haircuts? I'm like, can I get that one?
I want to be that
story. What about that one?
Not that mohawk one.
Oh, I got to go for the mohawk.
That's the kind of research she did, I think. Fashion research,
hey, you know what? I like the hair and the costume in X3.
And the breasts.
I didn't like her in any of the films, so I could have really done without her. And then tonight, we talked about the awesome, awesome Sideshow 12-inch Order of the Jedi Anakin Skywalker figure.
A fantastic piece from Sideshow, like every one of their 12 inches. Again, Star Wars collectors, doing yourself a disservice if you're not looking and purchasing stuff at Sideshow.
It's true.
It's absolutely, by far, these are the best pieces to be produced for Star Wars collectors of the characters. The we also mentioned the quarter-scale General Grievous.
That's right.
Another fantastic piece. Mm-hmm. Whether you like the character or don't like the character,
the pieces are exquisite.
Doesn't change the fact that it's an amazing piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
Of art that you can collect in the case of the quarter scale. Or a 12-inch action figure. I'm letting you struggle through.
You're the one with the magazine.
Yeah, you've got enough of you. I'm trying to do it from memory.
I know. I'm helping you. I'm helping you develop your toy memory skills.
Next, he's going to pose you with a Sudoku.
Great.
With the what?
And on that note, we cue the music.
Relax.